pick a window. This is the Defenestrate Media Network.
Oh, wow. I don't know about the costume, but that's some set of wheels.
Hi, I'm Marv Wolfman, and you're listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast.
You're listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast, and I'm your host, the radioactive professor of all things comic book, J.C. Carter. Joining me today on the show, my super friends in the north, our punk pixie, Miss Jocelyn Christensen.
Hi, guys.
And on the bridge of his own private enterprise, our very own Admiral James Tiberius Batman Laird Jeff Bell.
I think you did it better last week.
I
oh,
did.
That was me. Oh, that's right. Never mind.
It was better for me last week because I didn't have to say it. Very good job last week. I listened to the episode.
Aw, thanks.
I was like, oh, shit, they recorded. I better listen.
I have to make sure they didn't run the show into the ground.
How far did they fuck it up this time? Okay. That was quite good.
I don't think we have to retract any. I don't think we have to retract anything we said last week. I think it all still is true.
Yep.
That's good, man. That's a really good thing.
I like that. That would, you know, it's like, oh, well. We made these predictions. Well, they're still true. Okay, good.
Yep.
Good.
Yep.
Excellent. So this, first of all, happy Guy Fawkes Day to those who celebrate on the day of our recording.
Yes. thanks
to Alan Moore. I can never forget what November 5th is. Because V for Vendetta is, well, I mean, honestly.
Mine is everything. Patrick O'Brien's Master and Commander series.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, in like three or four of the 20 books they have, they mention Guy Fawkes often, and it was something that they celebrated on board ship.
Mm.
And so that's where I knew, because I knew those before I knew V for Vendetta. Mm-hmm. For some fucking reason, that was one that I just did not read until after the movie came out.
Right.
So.
The funny thing about V for Vendetta, just to wax a little professor here, up until V for Vendetta, which was V became a symbol of fighting against tyranny, England looked at Guy Fawkes as like we look at the January 6th insurrectionists. And so January 6th, we could be, you know, putting up a fake little effigy of the guy with the buffalo horns and burning that, you know, as like, our democracy survived these fucking idiots. And that's basically what they were doing. All, you know, all Guy Fawkes Day has always been, our democracy survived these fucking idiots, this fucking idiot Guy Fawkes. And yet. We now look at V for Vendetta and we're like, no, he probably was right. So well done, Alan Moore. You made you flipped the whole holiday on its head. At least for those of us who've, you know, read and or watched V. And I think more people have watched V for Vendetta than have ever read it.
Probably. Yeah. It was a really good movie. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It came out at a weirdly appropriate time when we had George W. Bush in office, so it seemed apt.
Seems more apt now.
Yeah, it's funny. It's like we looked at him as a potential dictator, and now we look at him as like, well, actually, he was. I mean, he was a war, war criminal, and not that great of a president, but he wasn't a dictator. We just had one, and we're gonna have another.
Wrong show. Yep. That was not comic book related at all. Well, it started out comic book related.
There will be comic books written about it someday.
Maybe so.
Yep. How many comic books have been about 9/11 and stuff like that? Yeah, there will be a comic book about that someday. Well, let's dive into some news.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice.
There is no news.
Nobody died?
Easy.
The only some guy named Bobby died. He was a coach in Indiana.
Ew.
And then some baseball player died, and he played in like the 30s.
Oh.
That, I mean, he was old then, so that was probably pretty impressive.
Yeah, it was just sports guys. So,
Sports ball.
Between that and there's just, I mean, the closest I can get us to news is the fact that SAG-AFTRA is still negotiating. And they just sent out another letter to membership that said, hey, we're still negotiating. Don't believe everything you read on the fucking internet.
Yep. Mm. Keep marching. Get out and march.
Yep.
Just weird.
Weird.
Yep. Do what Instagram and Jerry Ryan does every fucking day. I don't know that she takes a day off. She probably does. But I wouldn't know it looking at her Instagram. She's always got a photo of her out online.
Yep.
With a sign.
She's doing the work.
She's doing the right. She's doing the proper work. Absolutely. We'll talk more about that in our next segment, which is let's talk some moving picture news.
Came across someone struggling with hunger, how would you recognize them? Would you notice a 16-year-old boy who got his first job,
not for extra spending money, but to help feed his little sisters?
Or a mother who's in between jobs and
sometimes goes to bed hungry so her kids can have dinner?
I am the one in eight Americans who struggle with hunger. I am hunger in America.
Hunger can be hard to recognize. Learn why at IamHungerInAmerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Hey, this is Elena Huffman, Abaddon on Supernatural, and you are listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast.
There is nothing wrong with your television. Do not attempt to adjust the picture. We are now controlling the transmission. We control the horizontal and the vertical. We can deluge you with 1,000 channels or expand one single image to crystal clarity and beyond. Please stand by.
Did you guys watch on the TVs and movies and things this last week? Joss?
I didn't watch a ton, but I did watch a little bit more of Lessons in Chemistry. That's the show I'd started last week with Brie Larson. Mm-hmm. Delightful show on Apple Plus. I will say, if you are watching it now, this episode two, obviously I'm behind in it by a few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to give a warning because I didn't get a warning and there was a very, very, very intense scene. Yeah. It was hard. It was rough. It needed to be there. It was totally appropriate for the storyline.
Trigger warning kind of thing.
Yeah, trigger warning kind of thing. So just know that there's a part that if you are highly sensitive to assault against women, you may want to kind of fast forward that or skip over it or find that time point. Because like I said, it was very appropriate, very applicable. It was exactly what it needed to be, but it was also very, very, very rough to watch.
Mm-hmm.
I think they could have stopped it a little bit before and just implied personally. That's all I'm saying is yes, it was intense. It was hard to watch. I didn't like it at all. And I think that a more creative writer could have done the implication for what had to happen to set up A, B, C, and D on who she is and how she reacts and all of that. I get it. I think they just could have.
I'm kind of split because a piece of me, yes, wanted that scene to stop and just have that implied. But the other piece of me felt like with this story that they are telling, they needed the graphic nature.
Well,
and
the way, without dropping any spoilers, the way that they ended that scene needed to happen as well.
Yes.
Because that was fucking, that was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. It was. So, yes. So just be aware of that. And then there was like in the next episode, because we did watch two episodes. So we watched number two and three this week. In the next episode, it got really rough for me personally. with some grief situation stuff. So just, it's a heavier show than I anticipated.
Yeah, it's not, it is not light. The trailers make it seem like it's like just a cutesy autistic lady making science food.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And,
yes.
But yeah, it is not a subtle show.
It is not, but it's fantastic. And I cannot say how wonderful I think this show is. And then really the only other thing I really watched that is noteworthy and important is Loki. So.
We'll indeed. Talk about that.
Indeed.
Indeed.
I left him off my list on accident. Welcome to Wrexham. Is still just fucking amazing. And they left us on another fucking cliffhanger.
Oh my God. What an episode. What a fucking episode.
I honestly, last week's episode, I liked more. Last week's episode with the Lady Wrexham team.
Oh yeah.
I was an emotional mess watching that. I was so happy for him.
Oh, are you? Are you an episode behind?
I have not watched the most recent episode.
Yeah. The most recent episode was fucking amazing.
Okay. I'll get to that. I haven't watched that one yet.
I had a hard time getting to watch it because Hulu does this thing every once in a while where it shows a black screen with just the FX logo down in the corner and then runs it like it's in regular time. It just doesn't run any picture or sound.
It's because Hulu's the worst.
And I tried 3-4 different things to try to get it to work. Finally went and grabbed my tablet, opened it up on my iPad, and watched it on my iPad.
Lame.
Holding up my middle finger to my smart TV the whole time I'm watching it. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, you're a smart TV, aren't you, fucker?
Yep.
But yeah, so I got through it, and goddamn, that last episode was amazing. Yeah, I agree. The episode before that left on a cliffhanger and was a hard episode to watch. The Ladies Wrexham team episode was fucking amazing.
Yep.
Yeah. This episode plays out a lot like that one. So, yeah, well worth it.
So, I watched, I got Lower Decks in. really, really sick of these 10-episode seasons, man.
Yeah, I know.
You know, because it's like, oh, okay, all right. You know, I'm ready for 20 more.
Mm-hmm.
Any old time.
I get that the actors like it, that they can have more of a life. They can... Like, she's going to be writing for Star Trek Academy, or Starfleet Academy, the main character, the woman who plays Mariner. I can't remember her name now.
Yeah.
But anyway, she's going to be writing for Starfleet Academy, so it gives them a chance to do more and work more and have more going on. I get that. Like, Jack Quaid can be the voice of Boimler and be on The Boys.
Yeah.
So I like that, and at the same time, yeah, I want more. I fucking want more.
There's a show on HBO called Tacoma Fire Department. FD. It's fucking funny. The guy who plays the voice, oh man, I'm blanking names all of a sudden. The cybernetic friend on Lower Decks.
Okay. Oh, Rutherford.
Rutherford is on this show as his real person. And it's just, and it's hearing Rutherford's voice, not Star Trek related. It actually kind of, it keeps pulling me out of that show, even though that show is pretty funny.
His character on Loki pulls me out every now and then.
Yep.
Because he's the other nerd on Loki.
Yep.
You know, the other tech guy. And I'm like, he's just Rutherford at the TVA. What do we got?
Yep.
And we'll talk about this week's episode, what he really was, which was fucking mind blowing.
Yeah.
But no, with Lower Decks, these last two episodes, all this stuff with Mariner, all of a sudden I had this, you know, how we talked about how Seth MacFarlane went to Fox and said, I got a great idea for a Star Trek parody. Can I have some money to do it? And they said, yeah, that'll be great. And he makes, instead of making a Star Trek parody, he writes a love letter to Star Trek with the Orville, right? I felt like he walked into Paramount going, well, let's do a Rick and Morty style Star Trek. Oh, here's some money. And then he went and wrote a love letter to Star Trek again. Yeah. Because this stuff with Mariner, I mean, the fact that we go back to the first duty, we go back to Lower Decks. I'm still not over the death of Cito Jackson. yeah, it's all right there. You know, it was like, holy shit, thank you, thank you. And those who disagreed with him doing the whole Ceto Jaxa thing, them putting the whole Ceto Jaxa thing in, I'm like, nope, you're wrong. That was so perfect. Well done. Yep.
Cool. I watched Ms. Marvel at the shop to get ready for this weekend.
Nice.
And then I made everybody watch Major League last night with Tom Berenger and Charlie Sheen. Mm. And not only is Ted Lasso season one a blatant ripoff of this movie. there's a line from the movie that is repeated in Ted Lasso that is just the perfect wink and a nod to the fact that this movie is the homage from the Ted Lasso writers, you know? And so that one was fun. That was fun for me. It was at the moment when he says something, you're going to watch it someday, so I'm not going to spoil it for you. But mm-hmm. he says a line that Tom Berenger also says in Major League. And, you know, those of us in the room that were awake, we got a big giggle out of it.
Hey, you know, sometimes it's really hard to stay awake during a show, okay?
Sure.
Like, I get it.
Apparently it's endorphins. You release safety endorphins when you're with someone you feel safe with. So, yes. You know, my towering, non-toxic masculinity just makes Tiffany feel safe. And so she falls asleep the minute I walk in a room.
Absolutely.
Turn on a TV and she's out. So what about you?
Well, we've hit two of them, Wrexham and Lower Decks. Of course, Loki. We'll talk about that in a minute. The other one I watched this week was finishing. We're almost done with Doom Patrol. We got one more episode left. So I watched the penultimate Doom Patrol episode. Really well done. I think the redemption character in the overarching arc, if it wasn't obvious, is going to be Jane, and seeing how far she goes.
See, I'm still stuck in last season. I forgot to watch season three.
Yeah.
So
they've done a lot with Larry, but I haven't been feeling his stuff as strongly as I've been enjoying Jane's stuff. So. It's really cool. The end of this episode, I could see where Jane is going as a character. And well, I mean, it's pretty obvious where she's going.
We could very maybe explore what that means to you as to why you are attached to one character, not to another.
Yeah. And then, Larry, I think we got a hint of what's going to happen to him at the end of the series. No idea with Cliff, no fucking idea with Cliff. And Rita. Vic, though, is back in the full thing, and liking Vic again. In fact, I like Vic more now than I've ever liked him in this series. For the longest time, I'm like, I wish we didn't have Vic. I wish we'd somehow been able to keep Gar in there, you know, Beast Boy. I know he was busy doing Titans, but still... Oh, I wish we would have had Gar instead of Vic, because Vic was annoying the hell out of me. But this last season, he's kind of had his redemption arc, and I really like Vic now. So, yeah, nice. Really, really good stuff. And then, of course, there is Loki.
Loki.
There's only one episode left.
Yeah.
I know. I'm so mad.
Once again, these short series...
I think I'm mostly mad because I still don't know what the hell is going on.
Right now, I believe you're watching a writer's room try and deal with the fact that a dude's going to get fired, but nobody's said it officially yet.
Yeah.
And so they just keep ending in question marks, waiting for word to come down from HR. It's like, are we keeping the guy or not? Are we keeping the guy or not? Do we need to set up Dr. Doom? What's going on? That being the current rumor from the website I don't quote very often.
Right.
Is that Dr. Doom's going to be the bad guy instead of Kang?
Well, even Variety quoted that recently. I read a much bigger Variety article on the MCU. We'll talk about this coming up in the news section. And possibly you have to carry that over to Patreon because there's a lot to say about it.
Holy crap, that article was intense, man. It had a lot.
But yeah, I don't understand what's going on. However, growing up, I don't know why, but I seem to really watch Escape from Alcatraz a lot. I don't know how it happened, but like in school, when there was nothing to do coming up to like a Thanksgiving break or something, there was a teacher who would inevitably put on Escape from Alcatraz, and we'd watch it for like a week because, you know, you're only in class for 30 to 45 minutes, and so you only had so much time to watch it, but he just put it on, we'd watch it.
It could be there. There are underlying conditions that are making you with that movie, maybe?
I don't know. But we watched the Escape from... Anyway, the point is, we watched it a lot. And so, that very first scene where the guy slips under his bunk, puts a head up onto his bunk, and then goes over and moves an accordion, I'm like, fucking Escape from Alcatraz, what is this? I'm totally into this now! Holy shit! And then I find out it's fucking Rutherford. He will never be anything but Rutherford for me. Once you do Star Trek, you're that character. So yeah, and it was so cool to see that, and to see him make it to the beach. Because spoiler alert for us, if you've never seen Escape from Alcatraz, you don't know what happens to him at the end. You're left to either say, they drowned, or they made it. You know, I always like to think they made it, because I mean, it's actually based on a true story. Like, like everything they figured out that they did to escape. You know, they had this whole story. The screenwriter put the story together, but nobody knows what happened to those three guys. Nobody.
Right.
They got away, and if they got away, they've never come forward. They've never opened their mouths about it. You know.
I know what happened.
Do you know?
Yeah, they opened a gap on Haight-Ashbury.
There you go.
Because nobody'd look in the gap at Haight-Ashbury.
At Haight-Ashbury, nobody'd care. Yeah. But yeah, that was cool. The unraveling. I like the unraveling effect.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of a cool effect. Well done. Well done. Now unionized Marvel animators.
Right.
Marvel special effects animators. Well done. That was really... That unraveling effect is really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah. No, I don't know. Like I said, I keep watching it. I keep thinking, it's going to make sense any minute now. And it is not...
That was the penultimate episode where I've got no fucking idea what's about to happen. And right. And that's awesome, because usually penultimate episodes lead you to, I can kind of see where the finale is going to go. Let's see if they pull out a surprise for me, which would be awesome. But if they don't surprise me, then at least I have I can sit there going, I was right the whole time. But with Loki, I got no fucking idea. In fact, there's part of me going, I wonder if they'll extend it one more episode. I don't know. Because that's the case with Doom Patrol. They did, every other season was like 10 episodes, and they've actually pushed this out to, I think it'll be 13 episodes when it's done, this final season of Doom Patrol. So,
nice.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. So that's what we watched. Let's get on to some moving picture news.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice.
Okay, so yeah, there's no news. None at all.
Sweet. Well, that's easy.
I figured out a way to make the show an hour.
Oh, we don't need news.
We just cut out my part. This past September, a group of Marvel creatives, including studio chief Kevin Feige, I think I've heard of him, assembled in Palm Springs for the studio's annual retreat. Most years, the vibe would have been confident, even cocky, given the premier superhero brand owned by Disney since 2009 has remade the entertainment business in its image. Put a pin in that. I was talking to a guy at work the other day, and had something Marvel on in the background, and he's like, I really enjoyed this. Oh, it was She-Hulk. And he's like, I really enjoyed this. I was like, that's cool. Me too. He's like, I can't think of anything I didn't like. And I said, Secret Invasion. He's like, yep, you're right. I don't know what the fuck that was all about. I don't know why they made it. It doesn't serve any purpose. I didn't like it. And I was like, yeah, same. And, you know, it had a bunch of little moments, but
right.
Anyway, so everybody at Marvel was reeling from a series of disappointments on screen, a legal scandal involving one of its biggest stars, questions about the viability of the studio's ambitious strategy to extend the brand beyond movies into streaming. The most pressing issue to be discussed at the retreat was what to do about Jonathan Majors.
Right.
Jonathan Majors.
We have Jonathan Majors' problem. What do we do about it?
Yeah, no shit, because everything rests on him.
I'm going to say, I'll tell you this now, Marvel. Don't do what Warner Brothers did with Ezra Miller. Don't do it. Don't do it. Cut him loose.
Yeah. Yeah, they absolutely should. The actor insists he's the victim, and in fact, the accuser was actually arrested by, you know, the New York City Police Department as well. So they've both been arrested. They've both been arrested for domestic violence. They've both been arrested for, you know, for abuse. They've both been arrested for the same shit. And I think that makes matters much, much worse.
Mm-hmm. It
because
does.
Then
it
you're
makes
like,
it much more complicated for
yeah,
sure.
With the cops not saying what's going on,
mm-hmm.
you know, and the prosecutor's not saying what's going on, and there's not another prosecutor yet for the other one. So you just have this big fucking question mark just hanging out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
Right.
But yeah.
No, you need to cut him loose. You need to recast. You did it with, what's his name? Who's
Rhodey.
Playing Rhodey? Yeah.
Clarence Howard got recast.
You did it with Clarence Howard. And Clarence Howard, all he had the nerve to say was, I want more money.
Yeah, Terrence.
Yeah. yeah, Terrence Howard. He said, I want more money. And they're like, you're out of here.
His point was, pay me what you pay Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah.
And Marvel was like, are you fucking high?
Yeah, no shit.
I don't have a problem with somebody, but when this is like your fourth movie or sixth movie, I can't remember which one. It was a low number. And then you're up against Robert Downey Jr., who had a better agent and cut a better deal. They're not going to give you the Robert Downey Jr. deal because they had no idea how much they'd end up paying the man.
Well, the thing about the Downey Jr. is he actually took a pay cut to play Iron Man on the contingency that he would get a back end if he did so many movies with them. And so by the time they got to Avengers, the back end deal he got wound up netting him like $500 million or something.
Right, right.
And so he went in cheap to do Iron Man with an expectation that his pay would go up, but he would also have this, if he did so many movies, he would get this deal. And here's Terrence Howard saying, you got to pay me as much. And they're like, you're out.
Right.
The point is they did that and they could do it again. And I know people get pissed about it, but just do it. He's a problem. Just do it.
Look, all you need to do is a dongle. You put him into I don't know, I'm just spitballing here, but I think I can solve the fucking problem with half a brain cell firing. And that's you put him in a time slip. And then at the end of it, he shows back up and it's a different fucking actor. And you're like, I don't know what's happening. It's weird. What's up with my face? These teeth. Oh, new teeth. Always weird. And this is my war hand. Like that. That's what I'm saying.
I'm still not a ginger.
Yep. You could fix it with writing really quick. Or you have it so that he's, you know, he's in triumph at the very end, and then boom, something blows through his chest, and behind him is Dr. Doom going, King's a pussy. Ah, I'm Dr. Doom. But my favorite quote of the article is right here, still near the top, and that is, Marvel is truly fucked with the whole Kang angle, says one top deal maker. They haven't had an opportunity to rewrite until very recently because of the strike, but I don't see a path of how they follow or how they move forward with him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't either. Yeah.
And it makes me really sad because Jonathan Majors is such a great actor. And I was so looking forward to this whole character of Kang.
Yeah, that little
whole portrayal.
Yeah, steampunk Kang a couple of episodes ago.
Yeah.
It was just delighting me the whole time. And the whole time it's tainted with me going, but Majors could be a problem. We don't know yet. And you probably need to get rid of him, but oh my God, this guy's killing me.
Right.
Steampunk Kang.
Basically you're looking at a studio that made $30 billion over 32 films.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got a problem now with, I hate to say it because I don't have it, but Cape fatigue. They're like, are we putting out too much stuff? I'm like, well,
but
I'm only counting Secret Invasion.
For me, it's, yes, you're putting out too much stuff, and yet at the same time, you're not putting out enough.
You're not putting out too much for me.
Yeah.
But Muggles.
We counted on three rock solid, super strong movies every year.
Right,
We've gotten three movies every year. Have they all been rock solid, super strong?
No.
No. Have they delivered on the promise? No. Have they built the story? We can't really see that they're building the story. They probably are. Like, Eternals probably was building the story to something, but it didn't feel like it did. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Secret Invasion felt more like, let's tie up all the loose ends from Captain Marvel so that we can move forward with the Marvels without having all the questions about the Skrull.
And Colby Smothers wants out of her contract.
Yeah, that too.
Right.
And then you have, the same with Black Widow. Let's tie up all the loose ends with Black Widow and then have someone in who can be the next Black Widow. Let's introduce Yelena so that we have her, but you didn't have to do an entire movie that should have come out 3 years before. And you could have introduced Yelena then, but they just didn't do that. So there have been some mistakes made. I agree. I read an article today on how they're going to fix it. I can talk about that now, or we can push it to Patreon.
Patreon. We got time issues.
Yep. We're going to push that to Patreon. Hey, guys, we're trying to cut our time a lot. So you want to catch some of these insights, you got to join us on Patreon. Patreon.com/defendmedia.
My second favorite paragraph, I should say, is still, there was one bright spot in 2023. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. Became Marvel's biggest draw of the year at $845 million worldwide. Mm-hmm. The fact that it was directed by James Gunn, the guy now running a rival DC Studios, was lost on no one.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Wow. But look, this is a big-ass article. Pop over to thecomicbookpodcast.com and peruse at your leisure because it is not a podcast-friendly article.
Ow. Not really.
Nope.
Yeah.
No.
By the way, that was another movie that wrapped up loose ends.
Yeah.
Was Guardians of the Galaxy 3. It just wrapped up the story. So did Thor: Love and Thunder, and I'm like, oh, come on, can we move forward?
Yep. Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, which I have said and will say again, was a great fucking movie. Will be streaming on Disney Plus starting December 1st.
Yay. I'm so excited because I missed it in theaters, which bummed me out really bad.
It was great.
It's the only Indiana Jones movie I missed in theaters. I've ever missed in theaters, and I'm still pissed about it. And it's going to be hard. I will watch it. It's just going to be hard for me to do it because I'm like, damn it, I should have seen this in theater. I saw every other one, but it just hit at the worst possible time for me to get to a movie.
Right.
Yeah.
December 1st.
December 1st.
Ensign Roe, who I have always liked. And Dr. Gillian Taylor, which I am still split about, will be returning to the Star Trek universe in a Deep Space Nine prequel and a original series a movie era novels.
Mm.
So Pocket Books has announced a new Star Trek Next Generation book called Pliable Truths. Written by Dayton Ward for release in May 2024. It's basically being described as a thrilling new Star Trek Next Generation and Deep Space Nine adventure. That's the one that follows Ro. The other one from Pocket Books is Lost to Eternity. This will be out July of 2024, written by Greg Cox. Lost to Eternity actually has multiple time settings through, including 2292, 1 year before the final TOS movie, Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country. The novel features Dr. Gillian Taylor. She was the whale biologist from the 80s who traveled in time, they said, with the USS Enterprise crew. They were on the HMS Bounty, too. Mm-hmm. So we get to finally figure out what happened to Dr. Taylor, who, as we know, we last saw giving James Kirk a kiss on the cheek, saying, we'll run into each other. It's not that big a galaxy. Yes, it is.
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is.
Very much so is.
And then, quick announcement, Taylor Tomlinson, one of my favorite current working young comedians, has been named as the host to a new show that will be premiering after Stephen Colbert's Late Night with Stephen Colbert. I believe they're calling it After Midnight.
Oh.
Yep, After Midnight.
Yep. And Taylor Tomlinson is funny as fuck, and I can't wait to see how this works out. And
nice.
To be honest, since I don't have broadcast television, to watch all of her clips on YouTube.
I like this one quote in the article. The new program is said to cost significantly less to produce than James Corden's tenure at The Late Late Show. Yeah, no shit.
Yeah.
That guy wanted high production values, and they gave him everything he wanted, and he still acted the prick the whole time.
Pretty much.
Yep.
Pretty much. That's it for the news.
I'm excited for Taylor Tomlinson.
Me too.
All right. We're going to take another break, and when we come back, we're talking comics.
My name is Peter Davison. I played the Fifth Doctor, and you're listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast.
Neil Armstrong waited 6 hours and 39 minutes to step onto the surface of the moon. Jackie Robinson waited 20 months to play his first game with the Brooklyn Dodgers. And even DiCaprio had to wait 22 years to win an Oscar. You can wait until your destination. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Kevin Eastman, co-creator of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and you're listening to me on the world's greatest comic book podcast.
Wah, wah, wah!
All right, let's do some comic book news.
Green Lantern preview foreshadows a dark, intense story. Alan Scott's transformative journey continues in the Green Lantern. Alan Scott, the Green Lantern number 2. Showcasing the Justice Society of America members' harrowing attempts to keep his sexuality from being exposed to the public, thus changing his reputation as one of the greatest superheroes on Earth. In number one, DC Comics spotlights the Golden Age hero, taking a look back at his early days under his persona, because I'm not going to say the word titular, revealing more details of his classic origin. His life plays a vital role in the unfolding story. And what we're going to find out in number two is horrific.
Yep.
Oh, dear.
I don't want to say what it is because I don't want to spoil it. And that's what this article does. I apologize to you two. I want you guys to take the time to read it because the first one was good. It was quite good.
First one was fucking amazing.
Yeah.
I read it last week and was just blown away by how good it was. They truly, of the three that they put out, the Wesley Dodds, Jay Garrick, and Alan Scott, they saved the best for last because that was by far my favorite story. I love the Wesley Dodds story. Don't get me wrong. And I liked the Jay Garrick one. This one, I'm in love. I couldn't get enough of it. The art, the writing, everything about it, the fact that he's a gay man in the 40s. We'll talk more about it in Patreon, but goddamn.
Nice.
You should be reading Alan Scott Green Lantern. You should be reading it. That's all I want to say.
So something weird happened on the internet yesterday. I was on the Facebook in one of the retail shop managers groups I belong to so we can all commiserate at some of the dumb shit that happens in a comic book shop.
Right.
I'm more than happy to share the dumb things that happened this week in Patreon. But I went to order Watchmen because we sold the last copy. And I can get an absolute for $150 of Watchmen.
Oh.
But the regular paperback, not available for ordering in the United States at this time. This is probably why. DC Comics is announcing a compact comics line to reprint Watchmen, All-Star Superman, and more. I believe these will all be in digest, a little different, but close to digest size, 5.5 by 8.5.
It's the return of the Marvel Digest, or the DC Digest.
Yep.
Yeah, it's the return of the DC Digest.
So the quote we get is, the DC compact comics price and sizing is perfect for readers of prose and manga looking to pick up a new reader-friendly storyline. Great! Fantastic! Good job on you! Can and I please have the one for regular fucking readers, please?
Yeah, they'll fit on the bookshelf, you know, at Barnes & Noble. That's
yeah, they are going to disappear with all the other trades.
Yeah, they will.
You know,
yeah.
I will probably have to put out a fucking special shelf for them. But it's like, great, innovate. Bring in new readers. Don't piss on the head of the current comics readers that want the fucking comic-sized book.
Yeah,
I recall the detail, and I recall how monologue-heavy this fucking book is. It's going to be near impossible to fucking read.
Yeah.
But, you know, hey, digest side makes some people happy, so let's shit on everybody else.
I'm curious to see how they make it work. I am curious if it's just shrunk down or if there something else is going to happen. I'm curious. I'm just curious. I'm interested to see how these will work. Some of these books I'm really looking forward to in digest size. I don't know about Watchmen in digest size. I agree, because most of Watchmen is a 9-panel page.
Right. Like, that's hard to read in a digest size.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All-Star Superman should be okay. Batman Hush should be okay. Far Sector should be okay.
Should be okay.
Yeah.
Batman Court of the Owls should be okay.
So, we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see. I'm upset about it because it's like, comic book guys like what they like.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right?
they buy what they buy. And when they buy for other people, they buy it the way they like it.
Yep.
This is new and different. New and different tends to terrify comic book shoppers.
Mm-hmm.
Black Widow and Hawkeye series has been announced by Marvel. Apparently all the... Yeah. They're getting a new Marvel series to celebrate their 60th anniversary.
Oh.
Yeah. A new team-up series, a duo of superheroes, are the cornerstones of the Avengers after starting their comic careers as villains.
Mm-hmm.
Bad guys.
Black Widow and Hawkeye have only had to rely on their natural abilities and doodads compared to their superpowered allies like Thor, Hulk, and Spider-Man.
Yep.
Yep. Black Widow recently got a power upgrade thanks to an acquired Venom symbiote.
Get rid of it. It's nothing but trouble.
Yeah, I skipped that one.
Yeah.
I do. But no, I think that's great. You know, it's I love everything we do with Kate Bishop, but it's nice to see Hawkeye with somebody else again.
Right.
And then Marvel's new Ultimate Spider-Man will make Peter and Mary Jane married again.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Oh, good.
The spider, I don't know, what's a good name for people that read Spider-Man and take it too seriously?
Spiderheads?
Spiderheads? Boy, they've been pissed off for, they're more mad than I was at Dan Slott. I mean, they are livid right now about Amazing Spider-Man, and they don't take a break talking about it. They don't at all. So, that's coming. That'll be nice. What I'm going to talk about in a minute is the new... we're headed back to the Ultimate Universe, and I could not be more excited.
Mm-hmm.
That is it for the comic book news.
Woo!
All right, so what have you guys read this week, Jess?
So I know when this started coming out in singles, I at least got the first one. But then I was looking through and I didn't find any others. So I don't know what I did there. But I picked up Public Domain in trade paperback from Chip Zdarsky. It's the first 5, I believe. Mm-hmm. And oh my God, what a delightful story this is. I am sad that I missed it in singles because it's so good. And I actually was so excited. I picked it up because I was like, I'll pick this up because it's the book club book for this month about Dr. Volz. And then realized I was going on call and had already bought Marvel tickets for that night. So I can't come to book club, But everybody who reads it should go to book club and talk about it, because it was so good, so much fun, so relevant to the, you know, to the comic book writers of the past, mm-hmm. the writers and artists of the past, and what they struggle with now. So I really like it. I highly recommend it. But that really was all that I managed to get read, was just the one trade paperback. So what about you, Jeff? What'd you read this week?
Sorry, I was in the middle of typing Braxton something because you reminded me of something. So Hickman. Oh,
yeah.
Boy. It's dense. I didn't hate it. You know, and Hickman's been giving me hives with everything he's done for the last 20 years, you know, it making up fucking alphabets and symbology and all of that. But the Ultimate Universe, again, yeah, it's a Hickman joint, but I like the Ultimate Universe, and the way that they portray Thor in here makes so much fucking sense to me, I can't handle it.
Nice.
I picked up The White Widow. I'll say that was good. We'll talk about that more in Patreon. And then I picked up It's Jeff, the Jeffverse.
Oh, yeah.
Right there.
Cute.
Brilliant as always, cute. From Kelly Thompson.
Of course.
I'll do a little more in-depth on that as well in Patreon. Patreon.com/defendmedia.
Mm-hmm.
So I turn the time over to Brother Carter.
All right. So from this week, I picked up Captain America number 2. Where he is not having any of Spidey's shit. That was funny to me. Spidey says, so what are you doing tonight? And he gives him this, the way they wrote it out. I have a date with Sharon tonight. And I mean, just no shit. I'm not taking your shit. And Spidey's like, well, what are you doing before that? I've got some guys trying to kill me and I need some backup. And then he winds up sitting there waiting until he gets a text saying, Doc Ock's cousin came into town, and so they're showing that they're taking him out to have a good time, so I guess the attack has to wait. I was like, oh my god. And Cap's just like, he just leaves. He's like, I'm just not taking any shit from you. Scarlet Witch ends the series with number 10, and then they restart it with the Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver.
Oh,
and I'm like, are you just trying to bring in more readers by bringing in Quicksilver because you think the girl can't handle her own story? Everything that's been built up since number 1, though, was paid off very, very well with that, and I'm happy. I picked up Red Light from AWA. Holy shit, this is not what I was expecting. I'll talk about that in Patreon.
All right.
I got my comic book shop inserted a free book into my hold, and I was so grateful I had to read it. Unnatural Order. This reads like a Dungeons and Dragons adventure.
I'm sorry, did I insert that? Is that what I did with that? I inserted
That's
it.
What you did.
Okay.
That's what you did with that. It was inserted well. So gently into my hold.
Give me more comic. No, not the digest size. Full size,
please.
Please continue.
Anyway, it's a D&D adventure set in Caledonia and early Britain. So we're talking, and not even Caledonia, Hibernia. So Pictland, basically. And I just, yeah, I'll be ordering this one. I'm enjoying the hell out of it, so. Yeah, it's like, it's D&D set in my favorite place and time period. Why wouldn't I enjoy this? Yeah. And then, also we'll talk about this on Patreon. Last week I read Dracula from, James Tynion, Universal Monsters Dracula. I should spell it out correctly, 'cause I was told that was how it's in the computer. And then, Gone by Jacques from Distillery.
Jacques.
Oh.
Yep. So we'll talk about that also in Patreon. But today is Tuesday. That means tomorrow's Wednesday. So let's give our picks of the week.
You only say hello so you can say goodbye. These two words must make your life complete. You pick out the hearts that break to make your ego high. and I was just your pick of the week.
What are you looking forward to this week? Let's start with Jess.
All right, so from Marvel, I've got a couple of picks. One of them, though, is not really like I'm not going to run out and buy this simply because it is $100, but it is also an omnibus. It is Daredevil by Mark Waid, Volume 1. Mark Waid, I loved his run on Daredevil back in 2011 or so, and so that's the great, you know, it's a collection of all of those.
Mm-hmm.
Daredevil's 1 to 27 and number 10.1. There's an Amazing Spider-Man issue. So that would be a great, if you didn't read Mark Waid's run on Daredevil when it first came out, mm-hmm. pick this up because it's awesome. But also, Echo is going to get a TV show, supposedly, on the Disney Plus soon.
Yeah, and coming in January. We'll talk about that in Patreon.
Right. And they are releasing Echo, the Saga of Maya Lopez. Mm-hmm. That's David Mack when he was writing Daredevil, because, you know, Echo is a Daredevil character, essentially. So this is that good introduction to Echo. If you don't know much about Echo, it'd be a great one to pick up. And I'll probably try and grab this just because it will condense all the Echo stories together, which will be lovely. How about you, Jeff? What do you got for a mainstream pick, buddy?
Echo.
Oh.
Good 25 minutes before you. No, no, no. No, you know what? It's good. So, I mean, definitely. I'm definitely looking forward to Echo, especially after that fucking trailer that dropped this week.
Right.
And then Batman Reptilian is being collected in a nice little, probably a hardback. Because we talked about this a few weeks ago, that DC is going to start doing, they're going to stop doing trade paperbacks for a lot of their stuff and just start doing hardback only. Which, again, I hate. I don't know why I hate it, but I don't like it. But this is Garth Ennis, Preacher and the Punisher, and Liam Sharp doing Batman Reptilian. And if you guys read this in its original release of Black Labels for 6 issues, this was an intense fucking story. Garth Ennis, no matter what he's writing, only fucks around if it's like dicks. You know, you know, otherwise he's very serious, sort of.
Sort of.
Anyway, it was a good, now, it was
Mark
good.
Quebec Frank had little moments with the sub characters, but you know, very Ennis things going on with the sub characters. But when it came to Frank, straightforward. Absolutely. Yeah. Punisher was straightforward. Same, I'm sure, with Batman as well. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's it for my mainstream.
All right. My mainstream pick, I only have one this week. And honestly, I wasn't going to pick this one. But then they released a 5-page preview of the beginning of the book. Thanos number one.
Oh.
Yeah.
And he destroys Fresno, California.
And no one noticed.
And it is depicted with this single character in the most terrifying way possible. And now I'm very intrigued by this book. Very intrigued.
Who's writing it?
And it's by Christopher Cantwell, who's been a solid, rock solid writer for Marvel for a while now. So
yeah.
I might be interested in grabbing this one. So Thanos number one. Thanos has got to take on the Illuminati because he's come to retrieve something he has lost, and the Illuminati has to band together to stop him because they're the ones who hid it from him in the first place. But he takes out Fresno in trying to find it, which is fucking crazy. I fucking love it. So yeah, Thanos, I was like, oh yeah, I think I'm going to have to pick up the Mad Titan. So leaving the mainstream for the indies, starting with IDW. We have Star Trek Defiant number 9. They're going after Hugh of the Borg, the other thing I liked about this is the third cover, the Jonathan DeLarco cover, where whoever painted it really has a love for Jonathan DeLarco. Because he's got like a really cut figure, and he's giving this sort of soulful look at the Hugh headgear as he's taking it off. And it's like he's in a steamy tub or shower. And I'm like, wow, got some love for Jonathan DeLarco there. I can't wait to see this one. And then from Scout Comics, Cations number one is coming out. Stray Cat Felix leads a happy life skimming milk from his human friend Rose's convenience store. until the local protection racket turns violent. To save Rose's life, Felix breaks his vows and shares an ancient secret. Unfortunately, Rose uses her newfound knowledge to mix revenge and forbidden magic, unleashing a monstrous abomination that forces the mysterious Council of Cats to launch a global quest for the relics of the divine great cat. And basically, Rose turns into a cat, or at least sort of a weird cat thing. Well, Acacian, like in Star Trek, you know. She's got cat ears, but human form, and a tail and human form, and then cat eyes. Yeah. Okay. I'm interested. Courtney Cameron's writing this. And yeah, I'm interested. So that's Acacian's number one coming out this week. How about you, Jeff? What's your indie picks?
Indie picks, pretty simple. World Tree, Volume 1, is coming out. We just kept selling out of this, and I've been really, really wanting to read it. But yeah, it's about the Undernet and some kids that get involved in the Undernet. So I have heard nothing but good about this book.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't been able to read it because we keep selling out.
Right.
Yeah, fair.
IDW's got Transitions. When university biologist Anne Marbot learns that the 19-year-old she raised as Lucy is a transgender man named Alex, she's overwhelmed by questions. How can this be? Who put these ideas in your head? What if you regret it? Am I overreacting? How will your grandparents react? Why didn't I see it coming? Why is this so easy for others? Am I a bigot? What does gender really mean anyway? How can I be the parent of that my child needs? And on and on and on. And as a trans parent, just thinking about this fucking book, you know, is giving me, you know, goosebumps and sadness.
Yeah.
And I have a feeling this is going to be an emotional journey. But I am not afraid of a good emotional journey. One time. As I've said before, I'll read the sad thing. I'll watch the sad thing. It's going to be one time. I will never see Requiem for a Dream again, ever. I will never watch Schindler's List again, ever. They bum me out. I hate them.
Agreed.
But they're brilliant, you know, and that's what this one looks like. It looks like something just fucking emotional and raw. And I mean, I asked so many of those questions myself.
I like that the character's a biologist, so there will be the discussion of the genetic thing in there.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Which I like. I like that that's, you know, science is actually supporting transgender more so than we ever thought it would. And yeah, it's like I was putting this as my pick, but then I read your picks and said, I'll pick. yeah.
What about you?
Rude.
Where are we at?
Rude. I also had Transitions in my picks, but I think I also had Transitions as a pick of the future in Solicitations. So
yeah, probably. Yeah.
Thank you for that great descriptor of it, because it does sound really good, and I am really excited for that. But also coming out of Dark Horse Comics is another trade paperback, because apparently I didn't want any single issues this week. The Complete American Gods from Neil Gaiman. And I love Neil Gaiman, and I loved the American Gods book, and I've never read it in comic book form. And so I feel like that's a very worthy thing to pick up and read, because I love it so much. So that's my indie pick. And
okay, so it is time to do January picks. January is now available. You can order it from your local comic book store. So we are diving into the month of January.
Wait. I need you to say, it is time for the picks of the future.
Yes, it is time for the picks of the future.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice.
All right, Jess, what's your pick of the future?
So my pick of the future, you guys, it's going to shock everybody. It's coming out in December. It is Daredevil Gang War number 104. And I really feel like I don't need to elaborate on that, because let's be honest, it's a Daredevil title. It's going in my hold always.
Does it say who's writing it?
It does, I'm sure, if I can get that page to load. It's coming.
Okay. Here we go.
Erica Schultz is writing it with penciler Sergio Davila, who I've never heard of. So Yeah, and I don't know that I've ever read anything from Erica Schultz, so I'm real excited about this. And this is Elektra Natchios as a former assassin turned Daredevil. And she's going to be recruited by the Amazing Spider-Man to stop New York City from tearing itself apart. Yep. This is obviously the third or fourth gang war title that I have pulled from Future Picks lately. So look, we have a crossover event. Yay!
A massive one. A massive one where you're going to pick... You're going to have three or four issues for every single character, it seems like, who lives in New York. Yeah.
Right? Right. Yeah, yeah, that's what it's looking like. So I'm trying to save my pennies so that I can make sure and get them all. Mm-hmm. How about you, Jeff? What is your pick of the future, Fred?
Mine's coming from IDW. It's called In Utero. It's from Chris Gooch, one of Australia's most acclaimed young graphic novelists. Expertly crafts a taut, an intimate thriller about mothers and daughters, the monstrous and the mundane, and the power of friendship in the midst of catastrophe. So, yeah. And it takes place in an old mall. And, I mean, who wouldn't?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, I did, as an aside, have a little daydream the other day about, and of course it's a daydream because about what I'm about to say, of buying the Cottonwood Mall and turning it into apartments, like a retirement center for aging Gen Xers.
There you go.
Yeah, first floor shops and restaurants, second and third floor, every store turns into an apartment.
There you go.
Hey, brilliant. That'd be fantastic.
Anyway, yeah. I turn the time over.
For me, my first one for January is Avengers Twilight. This is number one of a 6-issue series. In a gleaming new world of prosperity, Captain America is no more, but Steve Rogers still exists, floating through an America where freedom is an illusion, where the Avengers are strangers and his friends are long dead. But is the dream? How do you assemble Avengers in a world that doesn't want them? Now, what's got me on this one is it's written by Chip Zdarsky.
Yeah.
And drawn by Daniel Acuna. So this is going to be a fucking amazing book. Zdarsky and Acuna together, fuck yeah.
I was worried it would be Blade showing up covered in glitter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Right? Yeah. So, yeah, this looks really cool. It looks like, you know, basically having to take back the American dream, Captain America having to take back the American dream. Looks really good. We got covers by Alex Ross.
Nice.
Throughout the
if you can
series.
Get it.
So, yeah. Yeah. So that's my first pick for what's coming. There's actually going to be, there's going to be 2 issues in January. I ain't holding my breath that there will be, that 2 will make it out in January, but they're saying there will be 2 in January. So
fingers crossed.
Pick up the Avengers Twilight. As always, start getting your orders in for these January picks. The sooner you get them in, the more likely that the book will continue. Past number one.
Yep.
Right. Yeah. Right. Also, we'll have as these go forward, we'll have different books that are graphic novels and trades, and some of those you'll have to order now if you want to get them. All right. I would say that's it. Anything else, kids?
Not for me.
Anything I have to say? You can hear it in Patreon.
That's right. So, first of all, next week is Wasatch Comic Con at the Valley Fair Mall.
Friday and Saturday, the 10th and 11th of November.
Mm-hmm. Make sure I will be there both days with a table. I've got Shaolin Nun number one that I'll be selling, as well as I've got a Shaolin Nun with a blank Shaolin Nun number one with a blank cover. If you want me to draw the cover, I'll do it. I can draw. I'm not as good as Greg, who is sending me 5 really cool, female superhero covers.
Nice.
Yeah. Drawn and inked by Greg.
Oh, that's awesome.
I'm also reaching out to some other artists to see if they can get some stuff for me this week. The problem is I should have had these 2 months ago and I could have gotten books to Greg and gotten a bunch of them by him. I could have gotten some to some other artists I know and gotten them back. I was dealing with color correction on the interior with this particular printer that does blank covers, and it was pissing me off. Because I would make them send me the sample. I would have to respond to the sample and wait for them to respond and say, you need to fix this. Wait for another sample to be sent. And it took three samples before I was like, okay, this is good enough. Is it perfect? No, it's good enough. So I figure most blank covers wind up just left in their bags anyway. Nobody reads the interiors. So these will also be unique because they're Grolixed. All the swears are Grolixed out, meaning it's all the, you know, funny symbols instead of swear words. So more age appropriate for anybody to read. Because really, that's the only thing about Shell and Nun that I'm like, when kids say, can I read it? I'm like, well, there's swears in it. Because anything else, there's nothing else like it. You know, there's no bad things necessarily. I mean, there are, it's implied, but we don't show anything.
Right.
But yeah, right. It's definitely, you know, it's the swears that I was like, so I talked to Andy and he said, yeah, I've got a Grolix font. Let's try it. So he actually Grolixed my whole first issue for me. So it was really cool. And then, as always, join us, please, on Patreon, patreon.com/dfanmedia. We are basically moving a lot of the stuff we used to go on and on and on about over to Patreon. So if you want to hear, if you like hearing us go on and on and on about stuff, join us on Patreon.
Yeah.
In the meantime, I will say, as I always do, until the Scarlet Witch needs Quicksilver to sell more books, make mine Marvel.
For Hell's Kitchen.
For Stan.
For Asgard.